I really think the biggest thing is listen, learn, and work hard.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach Nate Ballinger, assistant coach at American University. His coaching path started at D3 York College before moving on to High Point as director of player development. Coach Ballinger then served as associate head coach at St. Vincent College, earning NABC 30 Under 30 honors. Ballinger made the jump to Division I with William & Mary, where he helped the team reach historic win totals. And now, at American, he plays a key role as the offensive and recruiting coordinators. In this episode, we talk about his rise from the D3 ranks to Division I. We dive into how he builds an offensive tailored to his team's strengths, and he shares some insights on player development and creating efficient offensive systems. We also dive into the recent successes of American's basketball program. It's a great look into the grind and growth of a rising coach, so please welcome to the podcast, Coach Nate Ballinger. Dr. Dish Basketball is the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches. And this month only, you can unlock up to $4,000 off on their lineup of professional shooting machines. Just mention the Rising Coaches podcast to get even more exclusive discounts. What's going on, coaches? Welcome back to the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan and Doug here. As always, today we are joined alongside American's University assistant coach, Coach Nate Ballinger. Coach Ballinger, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate you being on. Congrats on your year, too. Incredible season.
Yeah, and there's definitely a couple things. First off, as Al said, congratulations. We've been following you guys. Obviously, Jesse, me and him have become friends within this last year and good friends. And I would say for him especially, I was following American a little more just because of that. I know he was at the game sitting behind the bench, so it was even another reason to text him and say, dude, you're on TV. Don't do something stupid. But no, but it was great to be able to see you guys succeed. And I know we'll touch on some of that, so I won't get into it right now. But it definitely is good to be able to see you guys have a great year and set things moving forward. But I want to start on, as we always do, we like to bring you back to the roots. And ultimately, what made you – so you were a player, correct? You had a four-year playing career. I know you transferred into Millersville, and that's where you ended up finishing, graduated. But going from your playing career to your coaching career, how did that experience, that playing career experience, influence your coaching style? But then, like, what transitioned you to be a coach?
Yeah, that's a good question. I started at small college playing like I wasn't going to play professionally. And I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do with my life. And basketball has been my life since, I don't know, first, second grade. So I got a major in psychology. The original plan was business, and I couldn't pass accounting or microeconomics. So we went psychology, and then I wanted to work with troubled youth. And I was doing that for a little bit as my college job. And then I found out that you need a master's and potentially a doctorate to make actual money in that field. So I didn't, at first it was, let's find a GA that would pay for my master's. I obviously had no idea how the coaching industry worked. The guy that I was playing for was a little bit older, and he was just like, look, email people. I don't really know. So I started emailing everybody that I could, and nobody responded really. A couple people did. They said, we don't have GAs. And then the guy at York College responded and was like, look, if I got a volunteer spot, like I'm just taking over here. That's where I'm originally from. And I had known Coach Hunter a little bit. He recruited me a little bit out of high school. So I did that. My playing career, I just knew I loved basketball. It's been my passion since I've been so young. So I don't know if my playing career really shaped it as much as I wasn't good enough to get overseas. So how do you stay in basketball? Potentially AU training, stuff like that. But the college realm was like interesting. And then once I got like a taste of it, like I knew this is what I wanted to do.
So literally it was like cold calling somebody selling encyclopedias.
Yeah, I was literally emailing people. And at that time, I also didn't realize you needed like a 3.2, 3.3 to get into some of these psychology programs. So I'm getting emails back and was like, do you have a 3.3? I'm like, no, I have a 2.9, 3.0. And like, yeah, we can't get you in. That was like, all right, if I can't go the GA route, like, what am I going to do? So I was really close to just being like, I don't know how to get into this. This probably isn't going to work. And then I got the email from York College, like, Coach Hunter was like, hey, come in, let's talk. And I ended up doing it.
Did your college coach encourage you to get into coaching? Was there somebody along the way that kind of saw it in you? Maybe I would just support it a little bit.
Yeah, I would say my high school and college coaches and my AAU coach, like, they were very influential in my life. My parents went through a divorce, and that was an escape for me, was basketball. And those coaches became mentors, really. They're still a part of my life. So I don't know if it was like them saying get into coaching as much as I looked up to them and that's what their jobs were. And whether it was my high school or AAU or college guys, I didn't really know the other side of the college business. Obviously, it was just like coaching college basketball would be pretty cool, I think. I don't know what I want to do with my life. I want to stay in basketball, and I get to work with kids. And that's what I wanted to do ultimately with my psychology degree, was try to make a difference in younger kids' lives. So I just feel like it checked a lot of boxes organically that maybe I didn't know it was at the time.
Yeah. No, you got guys, like you said, that versus telling you about it, they actually modeled it for you. And so that their influence in a way was your nudge, even though they don't have to come out and say, hey, I think you'd be a good coach someday. They just modeled it for you, which is actually probably the best way to get inspired is by seeing guys live it out in front of you. So good stuff.
I'm sure that psychology degree along the lines has helped you out probably a tremendous amount. I could say at least, because I got my master's in psychology and it was more exactly that. You start to see things, you understand things more, you know how to communicate with kids, the nonverbal, the cues that you're looking for. If a kid puts his head down, you know how to react with them, talk with them. So I'm sure that's helped you out more than enough too.
Yeah, it's probably helped me out more than I have any idea how much it's helped me out. And you're more educated in it than I am. It's been 11 years now since I've been out of school, but there are things that you think about, or you're like, oh, I remember this. Or I just think it's like even like learning, which we'll get into later. I'm sure like everybody learns differently. Just the psychology, like the mental side of the game is so real. So I think a lot of things, like I might not actually think about it, but it's helping me more than I probably have any idea.
Yeah, no, I social major here with psych minor. So group dynamics, you know, group mentality, culture, same thing. So you do end up using it and not even knowing that you're using it. Yeah. No, it's definitely some carryover, no doubt.
Yeah.
I got to say, just for everybody out there too, if I got a communications degree and I got ripped on all the time, what are you going to do? Talk to people? And everybody would just completely lay into me. I was like, yeah, look at me now. What I do is specifically talk to people. So no, but like little things like that. And you never know, a lot of times, like degrees like that, you never know where they're going to transpire, how they can help. I feel like a lot, not all of them, but a lot of them can help and relate in some fashion, obviously depending on what you're doing, but specifically coaching, a lot of degrees can help. You just got to find a way to spin it.
Yep.
You mentioned had you gone into banking, you would have found a way to use psychology.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
for sure.
You know what I mean? Sure. It just so
There's parallels with everything, whether you know it or not, subconsciously.
No question. Because everything comes down to dealing with people. So people are the common thread. With
relationships and people. Yep.
Yeah. So the job is just the angle by which you do that. But now basketball, you're coaching people. It's just the game. The game is just the avenue.
So I want to give everybody a quick idea as to your background real quick. I know we have it in the we have an intro that we pre-record it would be already in there. But just to give everybody a kind of a background, as you said, you stepped into that York College position. That's a D3 program. Then you go into High Point, obviously a higher position, moving up the ranks. And we're going to talk about, we talked about some stuff like before we hopped on here, how you go from D3 to D1. But then you go from High Point, St. Vincent, and then back up to William and Mary. And now where you're at now, Americans. Going from the D3 ranks at York, just to give, at least reading your description, looking at the background and what all it said, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it goes on like the responsibilities right out the gate as a first year coach. You're managing camps, operations, player development, recruiting coordinator, the lead on opponent scouts. Just as a kid who's stepping into a assistant position, first year coaching position, talk about how that position has shaped your successes, as well as go ahead and feel free to go into what we were talking about before about going from that D3 to that D1 life.
Yeah. So when I first accepted the York College job, I was a volunteer. So I accepted a supervisor role at a juvenile detention center. So I did that all summer. So basically I changed my schedule around, worked third shift, and I had just moved into a house, like was making decent money, and I would leave third shift. I'd come into York all summer. I
learn some office stuff, or if he wanted to go recruit that evening, because obviously the rules are different, we could go to summer league, stuff like that. I would go do that, try to find time to sleep, go back and do third shift again. So I did that until probably about August, and his quote unquote top assistant left. So he was like, look, there's no better way to know if you want to do this than jumping all in, but this is going to be your full-time job. So if I'm paying you,
sure,
you got to do the other stuff. So I was like, yeah, that sounds great. How much? And he was like, $9,000. Luckily, and not everybody has a situation, like my dad still lived in that area. So I moved out of the house I was in, and I moved into my dad's basement, and which luckily was 10 minutes from your college. So I became the full-time top assistant coach. I got really lucky, obviously. And then what Coach Hunter was really good at is he was flipping a program, and he was like, look, like right now I need to get players. And he was like, if you can recruit in this industry, like you're going to always have a job. So really it was, he gave me a rental car for a month at a time, and it would be every day I left at 2 o'clock, and we had a 3-hour footprint around the university that we recruited. So I literally was, I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I ended up recruiting like Division I and Division II kids, and I had no idea, but like, it just call, we had a philosophy, like we called 20 kids a night. I would text another 10, and we had a list of 120 kids, and you had to group recruit basically. And coach always just kept telling me, like, if you can recruit and your work ethic is really high, like you're going to make it. And obviously just getting done playing, like, it's really similar. You're out all the time. You're going to play. You're going to work out, lift, whatever. And then because I did get just done playing, like once we got in season, I was working the guys out. So every morning I would work out with them, and I developed really good relationships with them. So I would literally work out at practice. I didn't do a ton because I didn't know what I was doing. I just took it all in, and I jump into some drills and stuff. But coach ran all that. And then he allowed me to start looking at some film and just basically putting down what I had on paper, and he would help. This is how you got to mold it, and this is how we're going to do our scouts. But my biggest job was to work guys out and go find players. And like, I got really lucky my first year. I ended up kid being a D3 All-American. And like, that was the second class that he had that took them to the NCAA tournament. Like, I never got to coach those guys. When I was there, I think we won 6-7 games. It was a brutal season, but like in my head, it was like, if I love this and we're not winning, what's it going to feel like when you start winning? So I made some money. I started working for Hoop Group on the side. I didn't know any better, and I could recruit there, but I could also like make money. So I needed money pretty badly. So I would work camps and tournaments, and they really looked out for me. So I did that all summer. And then by the end of that summer, I got a Division I job. And I'll never forget, Coach Cherry at High Point was like, I don't really know the Division III level, but I've had another D3 guy on my staff, and you guys have to wear every hat in the program. So if you can wear every hat in the program and you're coming here to just do a specific job, I have no doubt that you're going to learn this job. Now, I was behind the eight ball. I didn't know Game Breaker. I didn't know any of the video stuff. Like, I didn't know any of that. Luckily, the guy that had just gotten promoted to be an assistant, he was in my role. So he gave me a crash course, and it was like, all right, figure it out. So that whole summer, I didn't really have a whole summer. It was the August period. I'm learning it. And so that took me to the Division I world. And then after a year or so, like, I started helping with scouts and just cutting everything and putting scouts together for helping the assistants with that stuff, and took on organizing recruiting and having a hand in all that stuff. I got way more responsibilities. And by the third year, it was really easy. Like, those guys, we had a wonderful staff. Those guys and the head coach treated me like a fourth assistant before that was legal. So just having a hand in all of those things, like, it really pushed, I think, my development forward. And I got to work for a guy who I think is one of the best X's and O coaches that I've worked for. Coach Cherry had a ton of success there, won 4 regular championships, regular season championships. But I was just a fly on the wall, right? Like, you tell him, hey, coach, this team's going to hedge, and he could go up on a whiteboard and diagnose what we're going to do. And you're just sitting there, wow, okay. So I learned a ton from that staff. We get let go, and I make it eventually to St. Vincent. We got probably let go in April. I had a 1-bedroom apartment that was month to month, put everything in storage. I moved back to Pennsylvania from North Carolina, and I lived at my dad's, and that was an experience in itself. I just moved out of there for 3 years, and I moved back in, and unfortunately my dad learned what hoop dirt was, and
I would get texts and emails every day like, hey, did you apply for this job? And he had no idea how it worked. I'm getting like the West Virginia assistant job emailed to me. And I'm like, Dad, it's not how it works, right?
And it's probably filled already.
Yes, you know, exactly.
By the time it's posted, you know, it's probably
for multiple reasons, this is not happening. All summer, though, what it opened my eyes to was I made it to the Division I level so early, but I had not once in my career put an emphasis on networking. And I was just so focused on doing my job. And I lived in such a small world at High Point. Like, this is all I was focused on. And like, I had some people I talked to, but not about getting jobs. I just didn't know how this worked. And we get let go. And we all have been on the other side where you get a text from somebody like, hey, can I get the scout on this one or whatever? And I just remember reaching out to people and like, I'm not getting responses. So that was probably like the first like really tough thing I went through in coaching. And I was reaching out to everybody, every level, emails, texts, like trying to make any connection I could. But the only people I knew that could help me also had just gotten fired. So they're looking for jobs as well. So I ended up getting an interview at a Division I for their ops job. And it was part-time, made no money, no benefits, like no nothing. And I was offered the St. Vincent Associate Head Coaching job, which was Division III. And I think at that time, I was probably 25, 26. And like looking back on it now, like I didn't accept it. And it was a big pride thing. Like I wanted to see what this D1 ops job had to do. I wanted to see what this other Division I video coordinator spot had to do. And Coach Cherry called me and I'll never forget having this conversation with him. And he was like, what are you doing? Go coach. Like, first of all, it's full time and it's triple whatever this Division I ops job is, but go get to actually be on the floor and do these things. So I think I ended up turning it down twice and then accepted it. And DP just kept calling me and he stopped interviewing people and was like, you're going to accept this job eventually. It was funny. A lot of head coaches wouldn't operate like that. If you don't want to be here, I don't want you type of thing. So I get there probably the end of August. He puts me in a dorm and I'm like, what are we doing? Like I'm in the middle of nowhere outside of Pittsburgh. And I'm like, I know nobody here. This is where I meet Jesse Reed, who, you know, small world, he played at American and was a hell of a player. He was our GA. So DP was like, hey, I'm going to turn the offense over to you. You're in charge of recruiting. Hey, I'm also in charge of fundraising, so I'm not going to be here a lot. So you're going to get to run practices. And I was like, all right. Well, the first month, D3 is a little different. You only have, 15 days before your first game. And I'm like, how am I going to install a new offense in 15 days when I'm used to like the Division I world? You have all these summer workouts that you can build from the ground up and the guys might not know you're building the foundation, but that's what you're doing. So Jesse and I sat in a classroom since the time I got hired until first practice and literally built our entire playbook out. Probably too much, but like everything was covered from one-on-one stuff to skill development, to 3-on-3 small sided stuff, to like teams hedge it. We call it ball screen solutions, but they hedge us, they switch us, they do this. We thought we had it all figured out. So we put it in. I mean, we set a ton of school records that year offensively, and then it was a ton of success. It was really fun, but there was some failure along the way. I think we played at Westminster, who was pretty good that year, and they beat us pretty good. And it was also my scout. So on top of the scout and I'm running the offense, there's only one person to blame outside of our head coach for it not working. And DP was a really, really good guy to work for, but he pushed you and he held you accountable. And like, it was different. Not that guys I didn't work for before didn't push you and hold you accountable, but he was very like, he's gonna let you know if you mess up. He's not afraid to be in your face and let you know about this stuff. But he taught, the one message he taught me was like, if you love on your guys really hard, you can push them really hard. And, you know, I'll never forget after that Westminster game, I was pissed off. And next morning he shows up at my house, picks me up, takes me to brunch and acts like nothing wrong. And I'm sitting there furious at this dude. And then we go in the office together later and we just, all right, let's start working on like the next plan. And it was just, it goes away. Right. So that ended up being an amazing experience for me. I really think it was probably the most beneficial year outside of York College in my coaching career, because you just get to learn so much and it's trial by it's error. What am I trying to say? You get to fail as you're doing
trial
it.
Trial by error.
Trial by error. Yep. Yes. Sorry. I was blanking. But then Coach Fisher gets William and Mary. And that was one guy I actually got to know a little bit because as a D3 guy, I was working elite camps when he was at Bucknell. And actually I went down to George Mason some too. So got hired at William and Mary, was there 4 years. And then Coach Simpkins gets this job. And back to when I told you we got fired at High Point, the biggest thing in my head was I've never networked. I got really lucky that I knew Coach Fisher, but like I didn't have a big network. So a guy that I worked with at High Point, Eric Gabriel, during COVID, we decided to do a Zoom group. At this point, I forget what we called it, but we basically had 15 to 20 guys that we did it twice a week, I believe, for an hour and a half. It was the same 20 guys. And then everybody got to give us suggestions on who we should invite. And there was another 10 that rotated. So it wasn't the same other 10 in there. And we talked about a variety of things that were going on in life, in the world at that time, ball screen coverages, recruiting, like anything and everything. And Eric and I took turns like, this is what today's show is going to be, or this meeting. And then it grew till we ended up having search firms on it, and agents, and NBA assistants, and Division I head coaches. Like Dusty May was on it. Mike Boynton at Oklahoma State was on it. Coach Fisher. Like, we got to a point where like we were having some pretty good success with it. But that's where I met Coach. I knew Coach Simpkins. He was at UNCG when I was at High Point. But that's where I really developed a relationship with him. And like, we got really close. And obviously it helped that Dane had worked with him at George Mason. I was in the same area. A guy I worked with at High Point, Ahmad Dorsett, and Coach were really close. And Ahmad is somebody I'm really close with. So it just organically developed. And Coach got this job and he was like, hey, I want somebody to come along and has some academic experience. We talked about what I'm looking for, and I would love to get back to running the offense. And so I ended up being the recruiting coordinator, offense coordinator here, just finished year two. So I'm sure I left a couple things out, but that's the path for the most part.
Yeah, especially getting to be the offensive coordinator, like that trial and error you were saying at St. Vincent, I'm sure that transitioned into now at American being the offensive coordinator. You probably learned a lot of what to do and what not to do. And I truly believe, going back to what you said initially about your college, you said there was a lot of ups and downs and a lot more downs than there were ups. Yeah. I truly believe that those down seasons are the ones you learn the most, because you see this isn't working. We can completely change this. But like, when you have everything clicking at once, you obviously know what's working and you know what to keep going, but you don't really find as many negatives in the good because everything's working. Like you have a 25-4 season or 25-6 season, and you're like, oh, everything's working. Why would I change anything? But like, when you're having a down season, you see all those, I should change this. And I guess that's where those assistants turn into, oh, I know everything, right? I would have changed this. I would have done this differently. I would have done this differently. So
those coordinator spots really grow you. I did it when I was at Ohio State with Coach Mata for a few years. And because you're on every game, so it's not like you're rotating around so much. This guy's got scouted, then 3 games later, you got another one. You're literally switched on every game. And what you eventually figure out is, okay, there's only so many ways a particular team can guard us. Yep. And so then you basically, and you figure out, all right, there's only, like when I was doing the defensive stuff, it's all right, teams are only going to run so much.
Yep.
And then they're only going to run so much. And then you shrink it down. They're only going to run so much that they're good at. So now that's a different conversation. So it just, the clarity you get with those positions, it's incredible. Because again, every game, man, like that you're on, and that really, like, it puts a healthy kind of pressure on you to be ready literally all the time.
Yeah. We've all been probably on staffs where you rotate every 3 scouts and like, you might watch that scout tape, but like, I remember being sometimes on the bench and you're gone recruiting and you get back and you're like, who are we playing today?
What just happened?
So like, right. The way we do it, and this is the first place I've been that we truly had like coordinators at this level. All 3 of us are on every scout. We have a defense coordinator, and then we have another guy that does the personnel, and he does specials. So he'll do like baseline out, sideline out, and he's in charge of POs and the game situation, like what are teams running, having that stuff prepared. So like, when we do scouts, that's exactly how it is. Like, I watch a clip tape with our guys. This is how they're going to guard. This is how we're attacking. Jackie Manuel, who's our defense coordinator, will do the same thing. And these are their main stuff. Like you just said, what are they good at? We don't give them too much. We don't give them all that stuff. Yeah. What are the themes? That's and then right. Our Isaiah Tate, who does our personnel and all that stuff, he'll put together your regular personnel edit. We usually start with that. And then we'll do Jackie's next. And then mine will be ending. And a lot more of mine is on the court. Like, hey, scout team's going to hedge today.
You know, that's right. That type
of stuff. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, the one thing I like, though, is we can come into a timeout
Coach Simpkins can look at us and ask a question, but we all have something we can weigh in on versus if it's your scout, you're probably the only one that's weighing in on it, but what are the other two assistants doing? And I'm not saying they don't have any idea, but I just felt like it really had us as a staff dialed in. Or I could ask one of the other two guys, like, what do you guys think about this? I like this idea, but before I take it to coach. And they've watched it just as much. Maybe not the offensive side, but they've watched the team. So they can give me feedback too. That might be a bad idea. Or, yeah, love it. Go talk to coach.
Yeah, no, no doubt.
We've been able to balance, especially in end-of-game situations. Do we want to switch? Do we want to do this stuff? Like, we can all three talk about it and give coach our consensus so it's one voice versus three.
Yeah, for sure. The other great part, and I'll add one other thing to that, is, like, it keeps it consistent for the players.
Yeah.
Because now when a guy has a question about matchups, he's probably going to go to your personnel guy, talk about matchups. Coach, hey, offensively, man, hey, your point guard says, hey, he's staying a little bit long on this drop.
Yep.
We can maybe start popping more, or we could do some other things, whatever that is. And then we used to do something. We called it a personality edit. So before we would even show offense, defense, person, before we would show personnel, we do, like you guys, personnel first, then we do offense, then D. But we would do like maybe 2 days before, maybe 3 days before, just a 2 or 3 minute, we called it a personality edit. And just watch it, guys. We'll talk through it a little bit. We don't really get into a ton of detail, but it's just like an appetizer of, this is the mentality of a team that we're about to play. If they press, or do they zone, or what are some characteristics these guys have, but what makes them unique? We would put this on this personality edit. So the guys would at least just get a little kind of dose. It's almost like beginning with the end in mind. Like, yep, this is who they are. And then you go back and give them the pieces and the chunks over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I love that. I guess we did something similar once in a while. I think early on in the season, the narrative out there on us was we were soft. And I can tell you that if Coach Simpkins, the one thing that will make – yeah, he doesn't like that.
I've heard, yeah. I don't know him, but I've heard. And he was tough.
No, the one thing –
the player, he was tough as hell. So
yeah, so he's a phenomenal motivator. And there have been games where we – to your point, it's 5-6 clips, and it is the other team just manhandling the other – whoever they're playing. And, hey, guys, like, this is how they're going to come in here and beat us. And I remember early on, there was a lot of those, hey – we got to get ready for this. And our guys started answering the bell more and more. And then it got to a point where it was like, you can't call us soft. Like, we're pretty tough. And that came from coach's idea, which is very similar with your personality edit. And especially when you start playing a team a second and third time. And if you felt like you ever got roughed up a little bit, those made the edit tape quite a bit.
100%. Yeah, no doubt.
Or specifically, there was one time one of our guys was doing a backdoor cut, looked at the ball, looked away. Our guy threw a ball right at him, hit him in the back of the head, threw a little person. I know that doesn't really fall in line with the personality clips. It was more just to get jokes in there, but at least to keep the mood flight.
Yeah, we've done that before too.
But I wanted to circle back, because one thing like you talked on was just being the offensive coordinator. And I feel like somebody who maybe getting into that type of role, like, that's – it could be difficult, at least for the first time. You said, obviously, you had the trial and error, so it's easy for you to be able to probably talk a little bit more on it. So for somebody, we'll say there's somebody listening out there, whether it could be a high school coach who's maybe the head coach and has to implement a new offense every year, or just anybody who's in your type of role. As an offensive coordinator, somebody just looking to implement an offense, like, how do you see a team and say, hey, this is what we're going to try and implement, this is what we should try and run and form around that?
Yeah. First, I think there's two different things. There's Coach Simpkins is our offensive coordinator. I assist him. There are other programs that one assistant might have it. And like, I'm not dealing with it. I'm dealing with managing the game. I'm dealing with our defense. So Coach Simpkins is our offensive coordinator. I am his assistant. So some of those questions.
My bad. I didn't mean to get you in trouble.
But I'm saying, like, but with building it, some of those questions, like, that's his answer. And then I'm helping how we move that forward. Like St. Vincent, like, literally, I mean, we could have ran the flex or whatever I wanted to do, like, we would have done it. So it's a little different is what I wanted to get. Like, I think there's two branches of what that means. So I think, first of all, good coaches base what they do off of personnel. And I feel like it has to be now personnel driven more than recruit to your system more than ever, because with the transfer portal, you might not get what you want, or the guy you built everything around just left. So when we got here, we took over a pretty good situation. We had Matt Rogers, we had Eli. So we had a five-man who was probably the best player in the league, and we had arguably one of the top three point guards in the league. And we had guys that could shoot the ball. Those are really good pieces to start with when you're trying to build an offense. Coach and I have a very similar philosophy. Like, we want to play more up-tempo. We want to shoot a lot of threes, and we want to be versatile. And I would say we run a very pro-style offense. In the offseason, all I study is the NBA and overseas teams. Like, pick a team, I'll go into EuroLeague and see who's scoring the most points, and then I'll just pull them up and watch them for a while. So a lot of the stuff we do is European-based, and, like, Coach played overseas for so long, so a lot of that stuff, like, he took. We weren't running the flex like Gary Williams did when he was at Maryland, but if you watch us enough, you're going to see a couple flex stuff in there, and that's what Coach knows.
Guys, a lot of people struggle guarding it, though.
Yeah, yeah. So one of our best sets, it's a longer piece. Like, there's a flex stuck in with it, and we got a lot of success. What made it fun this year and the last 2 years really is, like, Matt Rogers could play inside or outside. So you had a five-man that could shoot the ball. So you could play five out. You could play four around one. It gave us so much flexibility. So I think the number one thing is finding out who you have. And I'm not saying right now we're going to reinvent ourselves, but we're bringing in six freshmen. And it's something we've just talked about. This summer, it might be more diagnosing what you have. And the one idea Coach just had was, like, we recruited these guys and we think we have a really good idea of who they are, but let's go and get four or five games from their high school coach. And right now, while our guys leave campus, let's dive in and watch them even more and try to diagnose what they do well and what they don't. So as we're writing our skill development plans here, we got to get them up to speed as fast as possible. The last 2 years, we've had older kids. And now year one, we were new, right? So it was a learning curve for everybody. But this year we had four or five seniors. So they knew what we were doing, and four of them started. We're going through this again. Like, we don't have Matt Rogers. The biggest question now is, do we have a five that can step out and make shots? And if you don't, how are we going to play? And then our point guard was an all-league kid that just graduated. It's going to go overseas as well to play. So it's like, he was an elite point guard in this league that was a true PG. We think we were recruiting two guys that are that. We think we have some guys on our roster right now that can do that. But you're not going to see that until you start going through it. So we are actually looking at everything we've done and looking at our personnel, like, what's going to fit, what's not. And last night, Coach is texting me. He's on the road right now doing a coach's clinic. And, hey, I want to do this, I want to do that. Let's look at this. And now we're trying to diagnose those things. The one thing that Coach is, it truly is a partnership with both sides of the ball. He's so comfortable in his skin. And if I'm ever lucky enough to be a head coach, I want to take that attribute from him. He doesn't care whose idea it is. He'll draw something on the board, and him and I will just sit in there, X's and O's, and argue, for lack of a better word, about what we think works. And if you take him film and you say, this is why I believe in this so strongly, it's good, he will watch anything you give him. And now he might still come back and say, Nate, I don't like that idea. Okay, that's my job as assistant, is to take it. I don't make that decision. And he also might be like, all right, cool, you're going to intro it later today at practice. The other thing, he watches film like he's an assistant. The amount of film he watches right now, like, that's our defense coordinator and myself, like, we are just watching anything, like, our games, our recruit games, stuff overseas, like, how can we get better? And I feel like us as coaches, like, film is the key to all of that. And he watches just as much. Like, he'll randomly text us about it. He was watching Colgate versus Syracuse two or three years ago, when Colgate was just shooting them out of the zone. And we were on the phone. He was like, yeah, I just watched this game. Like, Colgate was on fire. And in my head, I'm like, why are we watching a game from 3 years ago? But he will pick something. Oh, I want to see this. Why? And he'll watch it. And then,
yeah, because, like, there may have been a reason they were on fire before they were just on fire.
Right.
It could be either one.
Yeah. We have a great respect for Colgate. So I just use them as an example, because when he first got the job, all he did was watch Colgate that summer. What made them so good? Like, why did Matt Lango have such a stranglehold on this league? And what Lango's been able to do there is incredible. And he's such a good coach. And we had such a respect for them. Like, we wanted to catch them. So it was just ironic that he was still watching Colgate stuff from 3 years ago when we talked the other day. But that's just how he is. And I feel like that as an offensive coordinator is like, we have to continue moving forward with what works too. And I'm a big analytics person, huge analytics person. Coach is about 50-50, like analytics, but he's also, I trust my eye. There's sometimes I can walk in there and I can diagnose all this stuff with numbers and he'll be like, no, I got, my eye is telling me something different. And, but that's my side of things is like, this is how, I'm not saying we would be as Alabama-esque with the threes, layups, free throws, but one thing I believe in is like, you got to live in the paint, whether now are you scoring at the rim or are you getting threes kicked out, but paint touches, out, getting free throws, threes, all that type of stuff. So we have a really similar philosophy, which I think is why this works. And then scouting-wise, like, I will put together in our scouts, like, this is what they do. This is how I would attack it. This is what we're going to work on in practice. And we give it to him. And then we sit down and talk about it. And there might be stuff he's like, I don't love that. We're not going to do that. And we have, it's a dialogue and of how we're going to attack things. And then calling plays in games. He calls the plays, but he is very open to listening. Even in ATOs, all that stuff. I heard an NBA guy speak about ATOs, they have them pre-scripted in the NBA. They might have a binder of these are the ATOs because we know how the other team plays. And we don't take it as far as the binder part because our staff isn't big enough. But we have a part on our play sheet that is ATOs, and it might be a list of 10 of them. And play A might be something that we want to run a lot against this team, but then this is a wrinkle off of it. So we have these ATOs built out. So it makes it pretty easy. Timeout's called. I say which ATO I like to coach. He'll think about it and – sometimes he goes with the ATO he wants. Like, it really works, and we have a good partnership with that. And working for somebody that is comfortable in his own skin, that, like, it doesn't have to be his idea. And that's – he's not a micromanager. And, like, some of those things – I've been blessed to work for some really good coaches and good people. But that's one thing, man. Like, if I'm ever lucky enough to be a head coach, I think that's the one of the biggest things I would take from him, especially when building an offense. Hire really good coaches and let them coach. And – that's why they're there, to help you. And it doesn't, you don't have to do it all on your own. And especially now, NIL and with all this other stuff, you're now fundraising even more than ever. You're recruiting so damn near a whole team every year. There's so much more that you get pulled in all these directions, that having a good staff, in my opinion, not that it was never important, but it's even more important.
Yeah, and, no doubt.
NIL's changed recruiting too. So it's like, now that's a big piece in it, but can you coach and can you get the most out of a roster changing all the time? And I think you have to be fluid with how you build your offense with that stuff.
And I want to give everybody an idea too. How you were talking about going back to, you said you guys got more European concepts, watching Colgate and mesh that into your offense. This past year, for anybody who doesn't know, American won the Patriot League postseason tournament and set a school record for 279 three-pointers. So you could tell exactly what you were saying. Paint touches, paint points, but then obviously heavy on the perimeter too, because you set a school record for threes. But I couldn't agree more. I was talking about this with somebody recently. I was saying you could be the best recruiter now. Like, before, everybody always looked at recruiters, right? That was a huge thing. If you can recruit, you can coach, and then obviously we could teach you the dynamics of basketball. I feel like you could be the best recruiter now. But then another school can call them and say, hey, we're going to offer you this X amount of money. And then, boom, that kid's gone. It doesn't matter about your relationship. This kid just made another $500,000. To your point, yes, recruiting is huge, being a great coach. But then even being able to do that fundraising and have that money is even more pivotal now than it ever was.
Yeah, a couple things off of what you just said. The one, when we watched Colgate, it wasn't for offensive purposes. What it was for a lot of times is they have a championship program. Why? And when you watch them on the court, they were tough, they were connected, and just finding those attributes, that's honestly what we developed how we wanted to play on our own. But watching them, it was like somebody went down, four guys are running over to them. They were tough. Like, their bench was phenomenal, the way they were so connected. They never got too high, too low. Like, just taking that is what we took more of. We thought, like, that is what a championship program looked like on the court.
Yeah, DNA stuff.
The DNA of it. So that is a lot what we took from it. And then the one thing with offense, like you just said, we actually were 299 this year, threes. 279, we set the record last year.
Oh, really?
Okay. But who your
they didn't update. They didn't update the information online then.
Oh, wow. That's a good idea on that. But, like, to go to your point, like, our effective field goal, I think we were 113 and 81 the last 2 years. So we were top 115 in the country as a quote-unquote low major. Like, that to me, effective field goal, are you making shots? How are you getting them? That type of stuff. The one piece I'd like to grow now is, like, our free throw rate. I think we got to get there a little bit more. We shot, I don't know, 79%. Like, we were top 50, I think, in the country getting to, like, making free throws. I don't think we got there enough. And now we shoot a lot of threes, so there's a –
yeah,
give and taken with that, but that's
ask the Celtics. They're dealing with that right now.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So, you know, that I think that's like looking at the effective field goal and then what you're shooting and your rates. We look at that a lot when we build this. And believe me, there's times numbers always even out, right? We shot 35% this year from three. There's games we shot 50%, and there's been a couple we shot 20, and it's always that sitting there. Coach, are we shooting too many threes? And it's no, this is what we do. Percentages always balance out. So that's one thing that what your philosophy is your philosophy. And the one thing as an assistant, I get to be in his ear sometimes. I think we need to shoot less threes. And to coach's credit, this is how we play. This is our philosophy. Like we are pumping confidence in our guys by changing, you take confidence away, which it's obviously easy as assistants to sit there and be like, we're not scoring. Well, that's one thing. Coach is very strong with his convictions, and this is our philosophy, and this is what we're doing. And he gives our guys so much confidence because of that. It's, do we work on that shot in practice? Yes. Like, we work on pitch ahead transition threes. Some people might say it's a terrible shot, but no, that's our skill development. We work on that. Every single day, they get at least 5 minutes of those threes up. So I think that goes with some of those numbers you were talking about, and back to how we build it. We shoot a lot of threes, but like we also just aren't jacking.
No, I love that. No, to be honest with you, you gave us some great information. We do, as I said before, like we appreciate you even just giving us some time to be able to hop on here and share everything. Cause like we said, you guys had a phenomenal season and look forward to seeing what you guys have to do next year and the years going forward, especially bringing in some more freshmen, some high level freshmen. But what we like to do is we like to typically tie it all back up, looking back on your career. Okay. So we just talked about, in a nutshell, talked about your whole career. But if we were to put you back into your first coaching position, knowing what you know now, what advice would you share with your younger self?
I really think the biggest thing is listen, learn, and work hard. Not that I feel like I didn't do any of those things, but I feel like it's even more important than I was 22 and didn't know what I was doing. And it was like, just go do it. But I think like listening, and maybe not to what you're directly told, but just everything going on to try to learn more. I probably would have told myself to watch more film because that, like, I didn't have a coaching, like I helped coach obviously, but like, I was 22 years old. Like this was Coach Hunter's first head job. Like he had to get more, he had to flip the roster. He had to do all those things. Like, I wish I would have started watching film sooner to learn, because I also think with recruiting and evaluation, it helps your eye with that too. Like you're watching. I didn't really learn that until I got to High Point. Now, like that's 2 years later, but starting that earlier and just having that be a daily thing that you do, like I still try to watch 30 minutes to an hour every day of another team, whether it's an overseas team, it's an NBA game that just happened. I don't always watch NBA live, but the next day I'll go and watch the game. So I would say listen, learn more, and continue to work really hard, because I still think I would rather work with people that work really hard that maybe don't have all the skills or answers that they can learn those things. I think a work ethic drives everything. That's what we expect of our players, right? Be gym rats, be really good workers. Like, why shouldn't we be doing that too? And then I think that's probably my biggest thoughts with that.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's a good question.
Well said, man.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. Tie it all up. And basically, the big thing is, to your point, when I was in the same shoes, 22, 23, you're sitting there, you're like, no, I know what I'm doing. I know the route I'm going. I know what to do. And then looking back, you're like, I really have no idea what I was doing. And I'll be honest with you, I still sit here and I still don't. Sometimes you're curious, right? But I get spoiled to be able to talk with people on here, learn from you guys, especially Al. I'm in his ear all the time. But you never know something until you officially have done it or know. The best way to put it. But we appreciate you for like I said, giving us the time to be able to be on here. Thank you very much, and obviously, we, like I said, we look forward to seeing what you guys bring this upcoming season.
Thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, man.
Of course. And before we wrap up, I do have to make sure to plug Rising Coaches Conference, partnering with U.S. Nike Basketball Camp, Snow Valley Camps out in California, Westmont College, July 22nd. Head to our social media page, risingcoaches.com as well. Lock in your spot, and we hope to see you in California. Other than that, we appreciate you for being on here. And everybody, another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.